I want to start out focusing, sort of raising a broader question. The Mishnah, let's take a look at the Mishnah, the first Makar on Pei Zayin, in the eighth parak. Lavi, can I ask you to read the Mishnah, please?
Certainly.
Just the part that's relevant. I would start. You can actually start with Chei Reshot Avakatan, a line above where I asked you guys to prepare. It's on Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. Go ahead.
Eresh Shote V'Katan Yatan Ra'a HaChovel Bahem Chayav V'Hem Shechavu B'Achirim.
It's interesting. At some point in the Daf Yomi, in this next couple of weeks, you discover that the word pigia has two meanings. The Bavli asked a question in the halacha of mugremes, whatever that din is, one of the five psulim of shchita. Does paga mean you actually make contact with, or paga means you come up until? Right. In other words, vayifku bo malachei Elokim, I think, is one of the Gemara's psukim. It doesn't mean that they malachim ran into Yaakov. It means they came to right near one another. Or, paga could be vayifka bo vayamos, where you actually make contact. So here, obviously, pigiyasan does not mean the meeting up with them. It means actually contact is made. Pigiyasan ra. In other words, it doesn't end well when you get involved with the Chei Reshot HaVekatan. Hachobo bohen.
It's not a... You can read it as like a moral, like, don't get involved with them?
No, it means hope... It's sort of like in this country, what kind of a car do you have to be the most careful driving around?
Red.
What?
Red cars.
Well, I actually think that's true, but it has nothing to do with it. That's just whether you see or not. That's my personal theory, just having to do with my own history of my first car, which was not a bright red, but a red. It had all the accidents, and Baruch Hashem, my silver car, since I never had any real ones, so, you know. But no, what kind of license plates on a car tell you to be really careful? Diplomatic license plates. Because, they have immunity. And therefore, you don't want to get involved in an accident with someone who has diplomatic license plates, even if they're at fault. Even if they're at fault. Right? For years, there was a big fight with New York City. All the diplomats at the UN who would have all these parking tickets piled up the wazoo, but the city really couldn't do anything about it because they had diplomatic immunity.
They just got rid of that.
I don't know. It would be a good thing. Nobody anywhere should be allowed to flout the law. But in general, so here... Chei Reshot HaVekatan have the equivalent of diplomatic immunity. It means if you get into a fight with them, even if they pick the fight, so they're going to be pater. Why? Because they're not b'nei das. So that's why. Hachovo bahem. Lavi?
Yeah, hachovo bahem chayav
bahem shechavu b'achirim p'turim. Fine. Okay, and essentially they are not bar chiyuv. There's a whole discussion, by the way, in the Rishonim. What if a katan becomes a gadol? Does he have to pay for the damage they did when he was a katan? And the pashtus says he doesn't. There is a Gemara in Shabbos at the end of the fifth parak on Daf Nunva, which talks, it's quoted in Choshen Mishpat in one of the early Simonim. Yoshio HaMelech, one part of his tshuva process, he paid back all the judgments he had judged, when he was a katan. But that was a mitzvah chasidus. But in principle, a katan really should be exempt for any damage he or she does because they're not a bar chayuva. Okay, next.
Ha'eved v'aisha pigiatan ra'ah ha'chovel b'hem chayav v'hem shechavu b'achirim p'turim.
So why does the Mishnah break this up into two different sentences? Why? Anybody? Why does the Mishnah break this up?
Because they have das.
I know. What's the din? Is the din the same? Hey, chovo ben chayev v'hein shechalochem p'turim. Why does the Mishnah break it up? It's not a klutz kasha, but the answer is obvious. It's staring at you in the face. What's the answer, Josh?
Because the amani and the. The Isha and the Eved have the additional din of when they're...
Correct. In other words, they're not the same din. The very next line. However, Nisgarsha Isha Nishtachar Eved, then Chayavin Lashalim. Because fundamentally, the Isha and the Eved are obligated, they're B'nei Chayuva. What is the Isser of being Mazik? I don't know. Let's just pretend for the moment the Isser being Mazik stems from the fact that the Torah says you have to pay. I don't have to get into the whole, you know, the whole, all the lumbus. Whatever it is, there's an Isser to be Mazik and there's a Chiyuv to pay when you do Nesek. Is an Isha Mitzuva in that? According to the Mishnah in Kiddushin, is this one of the mitzvos that a woman is not included in? What?
Oh, she does have to pay.
No, she's not. It's not, the woman's not exempt from Dinei Nezikin. In fact, there's a drasha the Gemara has here on Daf Tesvav that Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lifnehem, that it's Mashva Ish Ve'isha, you know, Lechol Nashim Shebetorah and all the Dinim. All Dinei Nezikin. All Dinei Mamonos are the same between the Isha and the Isha. So the Isha is Chayevis in this mitzvah. What about the Eved? Is the Eved Chayev in this mitzvah? Well, what mitzvahs is an Eved Chayev in? We are talking here about an Eved Kanani. An Eved Ivri, it's a given, is Chayev in all mitzvahs as a Ben Chorin would be. Just because you'd be, there's only one mitzvah that maybe he's not included in technically, but it's a kind of a question. What's that one mitzvah? Or prohibition? The prohibition of living with a shivcha kananis. Rabba Moshe lo shivcha. And it's a machlokes whether that's true by mocher atzmo or only by mecharua beisdin. And if you assume it's by mecharua beisdin only, it means that there really is an isser and it's being overridden, you know, for the eved shemecharua beisdin. If it's permissible to all of Adam Ivriim, then you can ask a question, what is the nature of the prohibition? But if Rabba is not... anyway, I'll leave it that for the moment. But so what mitzvahs... What mitzvahs is an Eved Kanani or and a Shifra Kanani is Chayavosin?
Same one as an Isha.
The same as an Isha. An Amma is an Isha. And an Eved Kanani is Chayav and mitzvahs ki Isha, the La La, the Xerishav of La La. The Eved, who was bought by a Jew from a non of non-Jewish origin, actually undergoes a process of Giyur. He has to agree to be tovel l'shem mitzvos in order to become an eved. If he refuses, the adon has to resell him to a non-Jew. And he has like 12 months, and if he doesn't agree effectively to convert, then he sells him, you know, to someone else, and someone not Jewish. But an eved and an amma have all the mitzvos of an isha. So the Mishnah here says that an eved and an amma, and an eved and an isha, are, even though they're potter if they're chovo b'cheirim, but if they are freed, or if they are... If he is manumitted or she is divorced, now they have to pay. So why don't they have to pay when they're still in their previous state? The answer is because they don't have the money to pay. They don't have access to the money. Masha kansa isha kansa bala, masha kana eved kana rabba. That would be the simple reading of the Mishnah.
Those are
No, they're not. I know that one is subject to modification more easily than the other, but both of them, in a practical, at least on, I assume that the din of Masha Kansa Isha Kana Baila is a din de Rabbanon. It's a takana. I mean, it's part of a takana, because a woman has the right to say, Eini Nizonis Ve'eini Osa. Whereas an Eved, it's a din. In other words, the Eved, there's no such thing as an Isha can have a Yad without Baila. It's true. But the norm in the economic institution until it's suspended is Masha Kansa Isha Kana Baila. So she doesn't access, Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi just says, the Nichse Malug, that would be hers, are still, even though she owns the Nechsei Malug, the Baal has the rights to Peros, so she can't sell those while she's married to the husband.
This would be how we see the Baal being Chayav.
And what's that?
I mean, if the Baal is Chayav, then how do we see that?
Well, there's no Hava, I mean, that the Baal would be Chayav. It's funny, there's obviously no discussion that the Baal is Chayav for the Nezek that his wife does. The best you could say, let me ask you a question, is a Yoresh Chayav to pay for the damage that his father did? The answer is, of course not. The only situation he would have to pay is, when does a Yoresh have to pay for the Nezek that his father did? When he was Yoresh Nechasim, and there's a Shibur on Nechasim from the Nezek. It's not a Shibur Haguf on the Yoresh. He doesn't owe anything, but the money is Meshubad. Remember the Chasam Sofer we said? Yasme de achli de lav didu, lezlo basar shivkayhu. Right? It's not his money. But if a father dies not passing him money, of course the child, of course the heir doesn't have to pay for the Nezek or anything else.
What we're saying about the wife, there's no halakha.
That the husband should have to pay himself from his own assets for a damage. At best, you could say
what
maybe there's a...
Ishto kagufo.
What's that?
Does that apply at all in this context?
No.
Ishto kagufo.
It's a shame that this is Hanukkah. If it were Purim, it would be good. Okay. So the point is, the Hava Mina, in this Mishnah, the whole discussion is certainly not about the Adon or the Baal. The discussion is about the Eved and the Isha. But they are mechuyavos in all mitzvos, and therefore they should be obligated to pay for the Nezek. But they can't. Unless you're not certain, the Mishnah is not explicit, the Gemara in Bava Metzia daf Yura Medbeis, the Gemara there says that the Gemara initially has a havamina that an Isha and an Eved are not b'nei Chiyuva. It's in the Sugya of Ein Shlech Dvar Aveira. And the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Of course they're b'nei Chiyuva. They just don't have what to pay with. Okay, so bottom line is the Mishnah makes clear here two things. Number one, that an Eved and an Isha who do Nezek are in principle chayiv to pay. And the reason they don't pay in practice is because they don't have what to pay with. There is a second thing that is implied very strongly by this Mishnah, but I want to talk about this question, and what is that in terms of the Tashlumin? I really guess I just said it, but yeah?
It implies that even the master wouldn't have to pay back.
The master, yeah. Certainly, then. How do you know, but how does the Mishnah imply that the master doesn't have to pay?
There's a piggy as a ra. It wouldn't be so bad if the master pays instead of the Eved paying.
There's a better raya than that.
Because eventually they'll pay. And,
yeah.
And if the master had to pay, they would have already paid. There was nothing
correct.
To pay.
I mean, it's not logically impossible that they both have to pay.
Ow!
Or.
Ow! Okay. So I want to ask that question, because that's a central issue.
Well, that wouldn't fit into the language.
I think my raya precludes the possibility, but I don't think yours does.
Why?
Because the commission says, piget and ra. It sounds like it's a bad thing for the person who...
No, why does my raya not?
Because the fact that the Eved has to pay doesn't mean that the master doesn't also have to pay.
Well, wouldn't it have already been repaid?
Maybe they also pay. I don't know. There are times when you pay more than one times the Nezek.
Okay. So I'm going to raise that as an important question. Clearly, there's not going to be a double payment here. You don't get rewarded. You don't find in Ezekiel that you're ever rewarded because you were damaged. Right.
You get kefal, you get arvach hamid. Like there are ways that you get more money.
That's not a reward to the nizak. That's a punishment to the masik. And it's only that's why you'll never find that by a behema, by mamon ha-masik. It's only by other masik in very limited circumstances. But that's not fundamentally a schar for the nizak. That's simply a punishment and a deterrent to the masik. Zach?
Yeah. Why can't it just be the latter? Like if it's masik paid to that.
I'm not sure I understand the thrust of your question.
It could still be possible to have two payments, and only one of them is actually a repayment to the Nizak.
That is, I think, unheard of, though. I thought you were saying something else. I can demonstrate to you one example where you see it's a punishment to the Mazik, not a reward to the Nizak, and that's by Gezel HaGer. If you steal from the Ger and you're Nishpalo, so you have to pay Karen v'chomesh v'asham. If the ger dies, so you have to pay the Karen v'chomesh to the kohanim. And the chomesh there certainly, I mean, you could say about the Karen to the chomesh there certainly is not tashlumin. You could say maybe that's because the Karen is also not tashlumin. But it's very hard to imagine that you, certainly nobody discusses paying the nezek to somebody else. Nezek is always paid as compensation, at least as we have it. So the yes, Lavi.
Why can't you read Avam Meshavim Lachar Zman as really the Baal should pay, but if in between the Nezek happening and the Baal paying, one of these things happens, then they pay.
So that's your point that it wouldn't be Pigi Asan Ra so much. If the Baal has to pay, then
yeah. That's unless you read it as stay away from these people.
Well, the point is that be careful in your dealings with them. That is true, but why? Why?
Because they're more likely to damage them because they think that the Baal has...
Oh, so I didn't read it that way. I'm sorry. I didn't understand Pigiyas and Rav means you should stay away from them. Pigiyas and Rav means when you wind up in a sikhsuch, you're at a disadvantage. That's all. I didn't mean... I was about the word Pigiyas, I mean, but I think it's clear what it means here. I want to ask sort of a different question. It really sounds from the Mishnah. It sounds from the Mishnah that the Adam doesn't pay at all. You're right. You could say Mishalim if the Adam didn't pay, or if the Adam did pay, they pay the Adam back for what he paid and so on. But it doesn't sound that way from the Mishnah. Certainly, Chayri Shot Devakatan, when they talk about Vehem Shechal Lachayim Peturim, and there's no Tashlum Lachar Zman, clearly nobody's paying for them in the interim. Who's going to pay for the Chayri Shoshota?
Right,
Katan, you could say, does his father have to pay? But so I'm going to ask sort of a conceptual question differently. Does the fact that they have to pay preclude the possibility that that the Adon is categorically exempt? I'm going to take as a given that there's not going to be a double payment. The Nisak doesn't get paid twice. But is it possible that it could be an either or?
Either or. Yes. Either
that one has to pay, or either one pays or the other pays.
Well, doesn't that have to do with the general question of whether it's considered like a repayment or like a punishment?
No, I'm assuming it's a repayment. You only get repaid once.
Can't someone always fulfill your repayment? Why do you need a question?
Oh, someone... No. The kind of can they? Do they have to? Can I be Tovea, the Adon, to court? Or the Baal to court?
No, I think it precludes it.
Now, clearly, you can't be Tovea the Baal to court. He's not a Baal Dvarim. At best, you can claim the assets of the wife. But by an Adon, by an Ebed, it's possible that an Adon might have to pay. Why?
Because he's responsible for the...
You could...
I said this before. There's a lot. No.
He's like the well-being of...
He's responsible for the welfare of his Eved or his...
Really? Omer l'Rav l'Eved esei mi v'eini zoncha is responsible for welfare of the Eved. You could have just said for the moment without stepping into any potholes, just say, you know why he has to pay for when his Eved does damage?
Mamona.
Mamona Hamasa.
But there's no Pshia on the Shmira. I mean, maybe there is, but like...
I don't know.
That's not how anything is phrased in, I mean, certainly.
I know we don't have curb your Eved that we have curb your dog, but nonetheless, maybe you have a Chiv of Shmira on your Eved.
So how do you explain the language that says that the Eved should pay once for stay with his free?
So I'm not saying it within the Mishnah. I'm asking the broader question because you understand that our entire sugya is difficult. Our entire sugya is difficult because isn't it clear the Gemara wants to prove something from the p'tur of the Eved and Adon by Nezek, about Kavanasa Lahazik and its impact upon the obligation to pay. But it's a very odd thing to even talk about the Adon being Potter when it should be categorically clear from the Mishnah and Daf Zayin that the Adon is not Chayev at all. The Eved is Chayev. The only reason why the Eved doesn't pay is because the Eved doesn't have any money to pay. If you do Nezek and you have no money, guess what Beis Din collects from you?
Assets.
Nothing. If you have no money, they collect nothing from you. What happens if you win the lottery tomorrow? Then that what?
I owe you notes.
Well, if you win the lottery tomorrow, now you can collect. I have a shibud against you for damaging me, but if you don't have any money, you don't have any money. That's what the Eved is. Right? The pashtus in the Mishnah on Pezayin, and I'm sure just the pashtus, the only way to the Mishnah, is there's no obligation upon the Adon. The obligation only exists upon the Eved. Now you have to make shalom between that and the Mishnah in Yadayim. But we have to talk about what the Mishnah in Yadayim actually says. I asked you, I won't say anything further yet. Okay, we may or may not get to it today, so I hold my tongue. Because I'm going to tell you something about this Mishnah, which I have no proof for. I have not no proof. I have some signs that point clearly in a certain direction, but I'm not sure that you've thought about it. Because it's not that I think outside the box, it's just I happen to have a few more boxes than you do. I also think outside the box. Once you learn a box, then you have, then you might think in that box as well. You have multiple tools in which to think. So let's come back now. So that's what the Mishnah says later. Let's come back to the Mishnah in Yadayim. Let's go to the Mishnah in Yadayim now. The Mishnah in Yadayim is a fascinating Mishnah. I'm sure most of you found the Mishnah. If you never learned this part of Yadayim before, you found it really fascinating. Really, really fascinating, because this is not your typical fare of Mishnayos. It raises immediately profound questions as to, it's a general question in halacha, in the history of halacha, what makes a Sadducee in a position out of bounds, as opposed to, if you're an Ashkenazi, what makes a Sephardi position out of bounds, and vice versa. Well, what makes Rabbi Eliezer or Beis Shammai inside, even if we don't postulate like them, and what makes the Tzedukim outside? So just one observation about history here. Who were the Sadducees? Well, I can tell you what we do. Why are they called Sadducees? They were Tzaddikites. They were descendants, or saw themselves, I don't think it's debated. They were priests who were saw themselves as part of the lineage of Tzadok. I don't think, according to our view, Tzadok would not have been very proud of them. But nonetheless, that's how they saw themselves. Now, what did the Tzedukim believe?
Cash. Didn't they, horrible for bribery of, the Kohen Gadol or something?
And those may not have only been Tzedukim. Yeshua Ben Gamla was appointed to the Kohen Gadola after he did Erisin with Marta Bas Baitus, who was one of the wealthiest women, but Yeshua Ben Gamla wasn't the Sadducee.
They didn't believe in afterlife, reward and punishment. I don't know. Because that was, the main break.
So how do you know that?
I remember learning that when I forgot the rabbi's name, it was
Avos. Al tiyu ka avadam, it's a pavos. Al tiyu ka avadam asham shetal kabo pras. I know what Chazal. I know the Medrash about tzedakum baita. So that might be actually the question is what is the origin of that claim? But there's something more that's associated, Zach, with the with they don't hold Torah Shabbat. Now, what is the evidence to that? And the answer is, to the best of my knowledge in rabbinic literature, none. There is a passage in Josephus that maybe suggests such a thing. But if you actually look in rabbinic literature, when I say rabbinic literature, I mean Chazal, I do not know of any evidence to that. There are a number of halachic debates between the Sadducees and the Pharisees, but most of which cannot really be argued as, do you have Torah Shabbat or not? It has to do with what your interpretation is, not whether you have a tradition of interpretation. The reason why people, I believe, assume that the Sadducees did not believe in Torah Shabbat is can be demonstrated by one of my favorite stories that a certain professor of Jewish history tells me, which is that when assigning students to write responses to a text, a short two-page response to a primary text, so some students choose a Karaite text, and more than once students have written for this professor that, they were so machmir. That's so strange. Now, why do students write that about the Karaites? Because the students think in their heads the following. Rabbinites, Karaites. Orthodox Jews, conservative Reform Jews. What do conservative Reform Jews stand for in their mind? Kulas. They don't want chumers. They don't want too many obligations. Therefore, Rabbinites, Karaites. What must the Karaites be? They must be the deviants. In the medieval period, the Karaites must be like the deviants in the modern period. That's the way they think. In other words, they project what they perceive of, might be true, but doesn't matter, what they perceive of conservative Reform Judaism, they project that onto Karaism. I believe the Rishonim may end up doing the same thing from the Karaites, which are the deviants from Rabbinic Judaism that they know, onto the Sadducees, who are the perceived deviants from traditional rabbinic Pharisaic Judaism in an earlier period. It doesn't really matter, but just be aware that when you read these Mishnayos, they look like they're engaged in a halachic dispute. These could be guys arguing the Beis Medrash. In fact, I'm going to argue at some point, maybe not today, that the machlokas between the Tzedukim and the Prushim might in fact mirror a very popular hakir of Bizman Hazeh, which I'm not a big fan of, but maybe we found another nafkamina. Yes.
Yeah. So, when I was reading the Kuzari, for example, for Mamar, it kind of used the term Karaite back in the Second Temple context.
Oh, yeah, that's usually in just the term.
Right.
Right. There, by the way, it's possible there's a connection between the two groups. It's not entirely clear. I should say it's possible there's a connection between the Dead Sea sect and the Karaites, but it's not entirely clear. Yeah, what were you going to say?
I mean, there are passages in other I think Josephus being the most obvious example. Or Josephus says they deny the traditions of the Father.
What,
and that
right.
sounds a lot like denying the ritual of death.
It's possible. I said Josephus might be the only source, but when you look at rabbinic literature and the debates between, it doesn't sound like these are people who just don't subscribe to any kind of
rabbinic. I'm not saying it's necessarily accurate to what's to
do. Yes, but the Rishonim didn't have Josephus. The question is whether Yosifon, when they had him and what he says about this. If he has that passage. Josephus was like the art scroll version of Josephus that was kosher in the medieval period. Yes?
I mean, it seems like in the Mishnah and Yudayim, the Stukim are using some sort of a Torah spell when they use the Kavah Chomer.
So right, so they use the methodology. Firstly, the Kavah Chomer exists in Torah Shebichtav.
Right.
Right? In fact, this week's Parsha. What's the Kavah Chomer in this week's Parsha? There are 10 Kavah Chomers in Tanakh. 3 of them are in the Torah. The most famous one is the one I think Rashi quotes it this week's Parsha. He does. The most famous one is Heim b'nei Yisrael lo shamu elai ve'ech yishmeini faro v'ani aral s'fasayim. But there's one in this week's Parsha, which is Heim kesef asher matzono b'fiyam t'choseinu heshivono elecha meretz kanan ve'ech nignov mi beis adonecha kesef o zahav. The third one is Heim b'yodeni chayim achem hayom mamrim heyisem asher b'achmei
v'si. I was not explaining this week's Parsha.
If the brothers say to the Yosefs the asher al beisav, they say, behold, the money that we brought back, that we found in our Amtachot, we brought back to you from Eretz Canaan. How is it possible then that we would have stolen stuff from your house?
Those are internal to the text. So
I know, I just meant to say the concept is an intuitive one. Everybody has to listen. The problem the Karaites faced when they threw out rabbinic interpretation is they had to come up with interpretation on their own because every text demands it. So, but I agree. In other words, I think that what you see here, the Sadducees are engaged in halachic disputation. So what do they say? Omrim Tzdukim, go ahead, Ilan.
Omrim Tzdukim. Koplin ano alechem prushim shatem omrim shori vechamori shehiziku chayavin ve'avdi va'amati shehiziku pturim.
So slow down. So right, what's up? Firstly, kovlim is not a common Hebrew word. It's actually a more common Aramaic root. It means to?
Reject.
Not reject?
Challenge.
No. My favorite alliteration in Unklus. Ki im tsaok yitzak elai, shamoa eshma tsak aso. Ki im mikval yikval kidamoi, kabbalah akabel kivilte. In the Vinyan Kal in Aramaic, it means to complain, to cry out. Tsaak. So kovlim, it's found in rabbinic literature. This is for the first case. It means to complain. That's an alliteration of translation, because that's not the normal word for tsaak. It should have been sivach, not kival. And Unklus probably chose it, so it would alliterate with kabbalah akabel, which means shamo ashma, the receive. So anyway, kovlim and alitzlukim, and the complaint is that you say that my shor and my chamor that do damage, I am chayiv. My eved and umma that do damage, peturin. Now, Gershon, do you want to argue about this? I'm going to laugh because you have to assume that everything in certain ways, almost everything he says is wrong. But yes.
In his 1933 book, Second Jewish Commonwealth, that Prushim is that Prushim doesn't refer to a Siddic sect, but especially in this mission, rather, it's a reference to all anti Sadducees that he did.
Okay. Okay, that's possible. I mean, let's put it this way. Seidlin wrote a lot of interesting things. He's reflective of a certain period, and I don't think, for those of you who know of Jacob Neusner and his work, so Zeitlin was, in terms of the wild ideas put forward, I would like to say that he was at least a spiritual progenitor of Jacob Neusner. Although Jacob Neusner did ask good questions, it's just that most of his answers were wrong. But his questions were often very good. So I don't know. It's possible. Again, here's part of the problem. The victors write history, right? If the Sadducees had been writing a Mishnah, what would their Mishnah have looked like? I don't know. You would say, of course, they weren't writing a Mishnah. Mishnah's Torah Sheval Peh. But okay. So they say that if my shor and chamor do damage, chayavim, it doesn't mean that the ox and the donkey have to pay money. It means the owners have to pay money. If my evan and amma do damage, I presume patur means the owners are patur. But ma im shori v'chamori.
Ma im shori v'chamori she'eni chayav bahem mitzvot, hare ani chayav b'nizkan. Avdi v'amati she'ani chayav bahem mitzvot, eno din she'ehei chayav b'nizkan.
So this is a very interesting. What is the Sadducean claim here? It's actually very important. I think it sheds light on certain comments that we show to make, even they don't refer to it.
What does mitzvah mean in this context?
That's what I want to know. She'ani chayiv bahem mitzvos.
I read it as you're responsible to provide certain things for them. So it's a little bit weird. Presumably you're supposed to be provided for your animals and stuff too, like food. But maybe
you're not correct. It's not about providing. It's not provisions. What is she'ani chayiv bahem mitzvos, Zach?
You're not responsible for your.
Right, so the Sadducees are already assuming, they aren't using the term that we would use, but what is the term that we would say, in the literature, in the literary use of Nezikin, how would we say chayav bahem mitzvos with respect to an eved? If you were chayav mitzvos when it came to a shor hamor, what would we call that?
Shmira?
Shmira sanalacha. Conceptually, that's what's being described here. Ani chayav bahem mitzvos, my shor hamor. There's no, you know, this might be an allusion, I'm not sure. And again, it's our formulation of what the Sadducees said. This might be an allusion to the concept that, you know, there's a din of shvisas behemto. Your behemoth is not allowed to do work on Shabbos. Does that mean that if the animal wants to graze, you have to lock it up and say, no, Shabbos, you can't, it's a malacha. The answer is that Rashi quotes Chazal. Of course not. Shvisas behento means you're not allowed to have the animal do work for you or for another human being. The animal is not mitzuvah and malacha. It's not shmiras malacha. If your animal wants to go have a lamentes malachas party in which it tries to do every one of lamentes malachas, you say, give yourself and have a nice time today, Johnny Ox. It's fine. Okay, if your ox wants to do damage, so then shmiras malacha. Your eved wants to be mechal Shabbos, you have to do what you can to stop your eved. It's shmira, you have to be mochiachim. You have to try to stop him. In a sense, he's your responsibility. So I'm playing games with that because that may not be what the pasuk is referring to here. But the bottom line is your Evan and Emma can't do malach on Shabbos, and you are to some reason responsible. What? There's a reason that Evan and Emma is a goy, not an Evan Kanani and a Shifcha Kananis. Precisely because they're not mitzvah malacha, that's the makor that Amir al-Akum Zunisu Daraisa by your Eved and Amma who are Goyim or by a Ger Toshav, the Ger Chashev Sharecha. In other words, having a behema, an Eved or Amma, or your children who are Ketanim, or Ger Toshav, do malacha on your behalf, those are all Isurim Daraisa. That's the Amir al-Akum by your Eved who's a Goy, or Amir al-Akum by a Ger Toshav is an Isur Daraisa on Shabbos. It's not, you don't have Misa. It's an Issur D'oraisa. It's a Gemara in Krasus around Daf Tes. So the bottom line is the Tzedukim are describing something about Shmirasan Alecha. And if you're sure where there's no Shmirasan Alecha when it comes to mitzvahs, that the Shmirasan Alecha when it comes to Nezikin, so you're Evan where there's a Shmira by all mitzvahs, certainly I should be Chayav Ben Nizkan. Right? Because it's Shmirasan Allah, yes.
Do you mean to? I mean, is this true in general, that I have an obligation to prevent my Eved from doing malach on Shabbos?
I think the assumption here is yes. The question is, what is the nature of that prevention? Everybody, you have an obligation, every Jew, it's called tochech tochech samisecha. But there's an assumption is that those who are b'shuscha, you have a greater impact, you have a greater influence on them. So I don't know if you don't stop your Eved and Amma from doing malach on Shabbos, but you're not asking them, well, ask them what matter, they're Jewish. I don't know that there's a specific onesh involved, a specific, but it's understood that kol mi sheish b'yado limchos v'eino mocha hu nispas alo stafon, the Gemara and Shabbos daf nun hey. If you have the power to be mocha against somebody and you're not, you're responsible for that sin. So you're Evan and Emma, you have the power to be mocha. So what did the Prushim respond? Amru lahem. This, by the way, is different than some of the others. In some of the others, you get kovlam anu alechem tzdukim, and they invert things in interesting ways. But here we have Amru Lahem. Now, a very important question before you read. They're going to give a response. Is this the real reason? The answer, I don't want a yes or no answer. I'm asking a more systemic issue. Is this polemical or is this substantive? Well, I don't know. There's a famous example. The famous example is, it's in Menachos, it's quoted in Menachos, it's from the Scholion of the Megillas Tainis, explaining certain of the Pharisaic Sadducean disputes about the calendar, and Mimachos HaShabbos, where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gives a particular answer, and one of the Talmidim says to him, what kind of answer is that? He said, excuse me, I can be docha him bekash, the Talmud that wanted to know what the real answer was. So you do have to ask the question of whether, in fact, this is the real answer or not the real answer. But you at least have to say, what was this answer that was given? So, lo.
So, amru lahem, lo. Im amartem b'shori v'chamori she'en bahem da'at, tomru v'avdi uva'amati she'yish bahem da'at, she'im atmitam yelech biyadlich g'desho shel acher, ve'aho chayav l'shalim.
Ve'ehe chayav l'shalim.
Ve'ehe chayav l'shalim.
Okay, how many reasons are given here? Okay, so what is the reason that's given here, Seth? What's the reason, according to the Prushim?
So there's the title of the reason and the explanation of it.
Okay.
So it says it makes a distinction between the shore that doesn't have da'at and the Eved and Amad do have da'at. So that explains the significance of that. And it explains that those...
So what does that... First of all, what does that mean? What does it mean that the shore and the chamor have no da'as?
Can act of their own accord.
They certainly can.
Don't
jump ahead. Don't jump ahead, please. No, no. I don't want to hear kavanah lahasik. Yeah, necessarily not in those terms.
In other words, animal thinks, will experience I'm hungry and then start eating grass, but it won't think, oh, I'm going to get back at my owner.
Okay, so you want to suggest, that it means that.
No.
You, by the way, you've made a jump, incidentally. This took me a while to figure this out when you get to Tosus and trying to read Tosus from Rabbeinu Peretz because they're basically unreadable, at least to mortals. How many different ways can an Eved do damage? I don't mean how. If Eved breaks the clay. With how many different mindsets, how many possibilities are there for it to break that?
You can accidentally knock it over.
Okay. Translate that. Just give me a term for that.
Chicago.
Okay. How about Shalom Kavana? Next. What?
It could be trying to get something.
That's still Shalom Kavana.
Okay. And then it could, out of rage.
Okay. So how many possibilities does that leave us with?
So far it's two.
Okay, do we have any other possibilities?
What's
that? I'm asking questions of intent. So hana is a motivation.
That would be the latter. I think hana would meaning that wouldn't be in the same category. We would put that with the second one, probably.
Correct. And as a dual hana, I think there's intent.
Yeah.
So how many categories do we have so far? We have two. The question is that all? I think the answer is no. I think there's I think what emerges if you read repeatedly, if you were to be shown it, Balei HaTosfos, I think that there are actually three. Two of them are in the category of intent. One of them is the intent to do damage. And the other is the intent to do damage with the intent of creating problems for another party. I'm not arguing that you can't just say there's no unintentional, and intentional. But I think in our context that there are actually three different things. There's in kavanos lahazik, there's kavanos lahazik, and then there's kavanos lahazik l'chayv es rabo, a response to it's being maknit es rabo in response to haknata. I think you have to keep that possibility in mind. Now, what you are suggesting here is taking those categories, that a shor and a chamor have no da'as, of course they can have intent. Well, I forget, you're suggesting that my Eved and Amah, because they have da'as, they can actually be miskaven lahazid in order to be mechayev, the owner. Whereas the shor and the chamor can never have intention to be mechayev, the owner, because they don't understand. They haven't learned choshen mishpat. They don't have the equivalent of choshen mishpat for oxen and donkeys. They know when you do damage, you have to pay, or your owner has to pay. Now, what is the nature of the damage of those three categories of a shor and a chamor? Is it unintentional damage or intentional damage without the intent of being mechayev the owner?
This question again?
The donkey and the ox, when they do damage, is that unintentional damage or damage without the with intent but without the intent of being mechayev the owner? What's that? I think it's unintentional, meaning the action has intent. The animal does it for a reason, but the animal doesn't understand what an act of nezek is. Forget who has to pay. My point is that an eved and amma can do nezek with intent without the recognition that the person they're creating a problem for is the adam. Right? It's possible that they can do nezek being totally unaware that it's not included with the dinis. What's that?
They can also not know laws.
I think that most human beings at a certain point understand that when you damage somebody's stuff, typically someone's got to compensate for it. You understand it's a social crime. But you understand their implication. You know, you may not be a bucky, and you may not realize the chap that your owner's going to have to pay. But in other words, an Evan Amma could do damage, knowing they can't pay, but knowing that they should really have to pay. They may not know the din that if they're nishtachim, they have to pay that. But right. My point is that they can appreciate that what they're doing is damaging and that there's liability involved without seeing it as a chap of how they're going to get back at their own.
Yeah.
And I think that distinction is very, very important to preserve. You're arguing that yesh bohem das means they know how to haknit in response shem yakti tenu rabba.
No, I'm arguing it's possible.
Well, if you're reading the Mishnah as one, that's what you're saying.
As one reason. There will only be two options.
If you're saying the Mishnah is only one reason being given, it's all part of the same thing, that's what you're saying. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just pointing out, I think, how you're reading it. Now, there is one, right, that is what you're saying. Yesh pohem das, im ak nitenu.
I don't think you could still say, like you're saying, that there are three types of damage. You would be saying... Dot refers to the potential. They're of an intelligence level that they can behave that way, while still recognizing that they could also damage intentionally.
What I'm asking, Zev, is when it says Tomar v'Avdi v'Amosi sheyesh bohem das, is that das lahaknet or das lahazik?
Lahaknet,
that's what you were saying. Lahaknet. Yeah. You're making it one thing. Okay, that's fine. And the reason I'm making a big deal about these splitting the possibilities is because is there another way of reading the Mishnah? What is awkward about, there's something that's mildly awkward about what you're saying. I ran this by Professor Burns in the car this morning, not telling him where I was going with this. You still don't know where I'm going with this. But I asked him, is there something awkward about the phrasing in the Mishnah?
I hope you're not going to say
with your explanation. What?
I hope you're not going to say the word she'in.
There is something awkward there. How would you have formulated the Mishnah? It's not impossible, but this is not the first choice of how to form that. Form it slightly differently, ever so slightly. I would have changed one letter. That's a Bob with the word, but Bob uses that word, but that's instead of She. I mean, well, it's not instead of. That's She'im instead of. I would have said, She'yesh b'hem das v'imach nitenu yelech v'yaglesh v'zim nitzah mischayev. Yeah. You're saying sheyesh pan das, and if I do this, then that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but she is the same thing. She is saying that of the previous thing. She, like,
no.
Das, she. They have das, that.
It's like because, the way with the shin.
So if.
So, firstly, sometimes in Mishnaic literature, the shin is instead of a vav. Yaakov Nachum Epstein, the late Professor Yaakov Nachum Epstein, very late, died 60 plus years ago, in his Mavel and Nesach HaMishnah points this out. Lieberman also cites this, at least I know one place in the Tosefta Kipshuta. sometimes there's certain shes in the Mishnah that might just be like vavs. Okay, that's possible. That's possible. But you are reading this essentially as one line. I'm going to leave that for the moment intact, as we might then go to the Gemara. But I want to really emphasize one point. The Mishnah in Yodayim is talking about who paying. The Adam, the Baal. I didn't call it up. We call it the Adam. The Adon paying. It's not talking about the Eved and the Amma pay. Gershon? I read, what's that? No, I read it that I'm not responsible for their performance of mitzvos. My Shor HaChamor have no mitzvos, and therefore there's nothing to enforce.
Any other example of it being used that way?
She'eni chayav mitzvos?
Yeah.
The problem is, you're going to have to, you're looking at Mishnaic literature, so I don't know if you have any other occurrences, period.
So, the problem I'm aware, I searched out, is one of the mitzvos, which is in the Sifra and Emor.
Okay.
Where it clearly means chayav mitzvos on them. The examples
given
are by
a bane
of
Pidyon
and
Milo. What? There's a mitzvah on the Chamor?
That's my example.
And there's no mitzvah on an Eved and an Amma. There are no mitzvahs on an Eved, certainly not on an Amma. An Eved, there's a mitzvah Milo when he's born, but other than that, there's no mitzvahs. I think in this context, it means, I don't know what else it could mean.
Okay.
I'm glad that you raised that issue, but I don't see, if you think about it, I'm chayav beniskan means what? I am responsible for the nesek. I'm not responsible for any mitzvahs for them. But let's even nania for the moment. Fine. Okay. I don't think that will change where we're going with this. It's just a different translation, I think. I don't think it's going to matter on the whole.
I think it's not true here, because you also chayav, for instance, in Pidyon on the Shor HaChamor, right?
On Petar Chamor, right. Now, correct. So that, I don't think that's what it means here. I think it means I'm not obligated to enforce their observance.
Okay.
Yeah, you can think about them. It's not the identical. You missed the Mishnah. I mean, it's a whole discussion in the Gemara of what the phraseology means. Mitzvah ha'av ala bein and mitzvah ha'bein ala av. And it doesn't mean what you think it means. Mitzvah ha'bein ala av are not commandments of the son towards his father, but rather mitzvahs needed to be done for the son that are incumbent upon his father. So I suspect if this is in a very early Mishnah, which it probably is, right? This is probably a very early formulated Mishnah. That's probably the later formulation of it. In other words, if it were being used here, it would have been mitzvah ha'eved al ha'adam. Okay. Now, the Rambam writes something here, which I'm not going to dwell upon at great length, but let's read the Perush of the Rambam. Yair? Right, so this is a very strange thing. This is a very strange thing that the Rambam says here. He says, the Rambam says, that we hold that avadim who do damage, their owners are not obligated to pay. As is explained in Bava Kamma, in the Mishnah on Pesayin, that nashim avadim muktanim, we don't have ketanim there, but that's a tov sofer, I'm sure, pigi asan ra. So how does that prove anything about the adon paying or not paying? So this goes back to the point that we made earlier. With or without your ears, the Mishnah says that the Eved has to pay. By implication, the Adon does not have to pay. Or Pigi Asan Ra, and if the Adon had to pay, why would it be Pigi Asan Ra? Let the Adon pay for the damage that the Eved does. So the Rambam here is not so much, I would say, a commentary on the Mishnah. The Rambam is summarizing the Din. He's pointing out, based upon the Maskana of this Mishnah in Yadayim, that there's no Chiyuv for the Adon to pay for the Nezakim of his Eved. But rather, there is a chiyuv for the avadim to pay for their own nezek. That chiyuv may not be fulfillable until the eved, becomes free and has the assets to pay, or the isha becomes divorced and has the assets to pay. So I'm going to mention one question that's very, very important, which I know maybe I said at the beginning of Shir, but I think this might or might not be a machlokas harishonim. I would argue if it isn't, it definitely should be. which is the obligation of an the patur of an adon to pay for the damages of his eved or ama. Is that a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan?
It's a,
when you read the Mishnah in Yadayim, does it sound like it's a din d'oraisa?
Doesn't sound one way or the other. It's not clear.
Really? There is a throwaway line in some of the Balei HaTosas about there's a momentary havamina that the reason why in Eved v'Amar Peturim is because it's the Adon is Pater is Xeris HaKosov. The Ish Kiyake. It has to be the person himself, not his Eved, or something like that. If you look, I think I don't know if it's buried somewhere, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, or somewhere, you have such a notion. And then the maskana is that, no, the reason why you don't pay if you're Eved Amad Adam is Shem Akni Tenem. The Me'iri, by the way, what does the Me'iri say? Benji, what does the Me'iri say about whether or not the Ptur of the Adon is the Raisa of Rabbanon? I think I heard you reading that, discuss that with your Havrusa.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh. It's the Karas Chachamim. Sounds like the Miri says, not sound like. Miri says. He says.
Gemara in Baba Kama, it seems like it's the Raisa.
Which Gemara?
Bakal.
Really?
Because they're bringing it as a proof against the.
Yes, the Havamina, but what's the Maskana?
Yeah, but the fact that they could. Yeah, but that's for a different reason. That's for a different reason.
Something they didn't know. There is something they didn't know in the Havamina that they only know the Maskana. That's one of the most difficult parts of this passage, is to figure out. And that's Tosa's question.
Yeah,
second
Tosa
question.
Says, according to Tosa, he knew the thing. But they're bringing this as a proof.
In the Havamina, I agree. That's why the Rishonim want to say. The Havamina was the same Xeris HaKasa, the other was Papa. But what's the Maskana of the Gemara? The Maskana of the Gemara sounds like. It sounds like it's because Shem Akni Tenu, because you can't have the other bay, because otherwise the Eved says, oh, I got to bring it.
That is, that it's the same thing. That whole thing is one answer.
Well, I don't know what Tosa says. We got to discuss what Tosa says. That's a Balagan answer. We'll get there.
Right.
We'll get there. But I think that's a very, very important question. What is the Chiyuv d'Oraisa? Is this, in effect, is Shema Akni Tenu, number one, is it the real reason? Number two, if it is the real reason, does that mean it's only the Rabbanan, or as some wanted to say, is it a time of the Krah? Is the reason why the Torah exempts, and so on. Okay. All right. I'm delighted. It's taking enough time. You're going to be in suspense over Shabbos, wondering what I'm going to say. So we're going to start the Gemara now. Cliffhangers are great. Cliffhangers are great. I'm not usually... For the visitors / newcomers, I'm not usually such a sadist. But on occasion, I want your dreams over Friday night and Motzei Shabbos to be of the sugya and the Mishnah Yadayim. Yes, Lavi.
To say it was a time of the Krah, you'd have to give some other separate reason why the Kal V'Chomer doesn't work. Right?
No, because if it's the reason why... If it's the reason the Torah exempts the Adam, but the reason why the Torah exempts the Shema Akitenu, then what in fact we're saying is that Kavanasa Lahazik is not a reason for the Torah. It's unique in these circumstances. Let me help a little bit, because when we talk about Tosfos, and I need something for Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, let me frame it to you this way. How easily can you guard a shor? What? Now, what are you guarding a shore from doing?
Scoring.
Doing damage. But what you're doing is you have to calm the shore down. Does the shore want to do damage?
What kind of damage?
Not really.
Shame.
The shore is not in full possession of faculties. Karen. I'm sorry, Karen. Right, your job is to calm that shore down. Right? Because the shore, when it goes and it gores something, the shore doesn't stop and think, for the most part. Ooh! I see him. I think I remember from last week. I'm going to gore him. The shore is just mad. The shore is literally mad. Not angry, but mad. And the shore goes, and it's flailing. It's reaching out. It's just been incited. It doesn't matter who's in its path. It's going to gore whatever's in its path because it's just been unhinged. It's become unhinged. When an Eved and Amah have Kavana Lahazek, is that the same thing? Fundamentally, no, because what happens, particularly if your Eved's goal is to be Mechayev Rabo Me'amana, what's going to happen when you try to stop the Eved from doing it?
He's
he's going to keep trying. In other words, the Eved has an agenda there. An Eved can both know that he's doing damage that will create liability even for himself or herself maybe, but the Eved can also have a plan. That is, Shor generally does not have a plan. The Shor doesn't have a plan. You could say that Kavanaso Lahazik is the reason why you should be Chayav. In other words, when I know, when the Shor is Kavana Lahazik, it doesn't mean the Shor thought, I want to gore that one. $200 worth of damage. I'll take goring for $200. That's not what's going on. So the Shor simply, when the Shor is Miskafein Lahazik, your job is to recognize the situation and step in there. The Shor doesn't engage in premeditate. It's kavanasa lahazik is the term the Gemara used. But this is, generally speaking, not premeditated, nezek, premeditated kavana. The Eved and the Amma is a totally different kavana. The Eved and the Amma, because they are b'nei da'as, they know what the end game is. Right? If you want a zev, except you're already in the Mishnah, it's one reason. Because they are b'nei da'as, they understand exactly what they're doing. There's a purpose for it, not just releasing their energies right now. Right? There is a method to their madness. So that could be the Gzeres HaKasa, if there is such a Gzeres HaKasa, that an Adon is Patar as Eben Amma.
It's a Pircha for the...
And therefore it's irrelevant to the Kal V'Chomer. The Kal V'Chomer is all about Kavana Lahazik when the animal is simply... What does really Kavana Lahazik mean, actually, when the animal does it? It's really not a positive definition. It's a negative definition.
It's not Hana.
Correct. It's not Lahana Asam. It's not normal. It's not, it's not Ragyu, whatever the term they use, not Urchayu, but whatever is Matsui. And it's not, that almost mentioned, because it's not Lahana Asam.
Yeah.
It's not in its course of going. It's not that the Shor has Kavana Lahazik. It's that it's not Lahana Asam. So how else do we explain it? But the truth is, whenever a shor does damage, when it gores, it is lahana asa, right? The same way, if you break a kli, if you kore your beged on Shabbos, mishakeh chamaso for Rabbi Yehuda, that might be called misakein. Why? Because you made nachas ruach, you feel better. Right? When you knock the building down, you punch it in. Maybe, forgetting about what the normal crimes are so there, you get hana from that. We don't consider that a good hana. That's the hana that the Shor gets, but that's not what we mean. So that's what they mean when they say, kavanasa lahazik, is that there's no intent of regular hana. That's different than the Eved and Amma's kavana lahazik, than their das. Their das means they know exactly what the implications of their actions are, and when it's done to mess over the owners, they have an ulterior motive there, yes.
There's a reality question, which is, it's not clear to me that oxen don't, or other animals, forget oxen for a second, other animals don't have actual intention to cause damage. I can imagine certain, especially the more aggressive or more intelligent animals, deciding, I don't like particular people, and I'll attack them when I see them. Animals in war, for example, or people with aggressive dogs.
I don't think the animal appreciates. The animal doesn't do it lahana asa from our vantage point.
I know, but I'm not sure why we assume
But the animal doesn't understand. In other words, and even there, the animal, you would say that it's bred into the animal a form of behavior rather than a calculated act on the part of the animal.
I don't know why we think it is, how calculated we need to think it is.
Enough to distinguish between the kavana of a shor lahazik and the kavana of an adam lahazik. Okay, well, because if you believe that the tour is not a tour de rabbana but a tour de raisa, they have to be fundamentally different. In other words, I don't care whether it's a pasuk or not. The reason why an adam is going to be patar is evident amma has to be because the kavana lahazik is substantively different than the kavana lahazik of a behemoth. So much so that he can't prevent it.
Or it could be this external reason, which is when you're able to have a certain kind of cognitive kavana, we're concerned about the ramifications of letting your owner be high.
Again, if it's a d'oraisa, that means that has to be substantively different. Even though they're not using terminology, there are two different kinds of kavana lahazik. I'm not going to argue over semantics. They call the shor's intent kavanasa lahazik, but the shor has kavana for what it does. I don't think the shor understands what the nezek is. Even to the extent that the shor attacks someone it doesn't like,
it's presumably because it thinks that person in some ways is bad for it. It doesn't understand. If you took the person away, the shorv wouldn't gore. Whereas the Eved Va'ama have a forethought agenda.
So are you suggesting that you're putting on Eved Va'ama because it's hard to prevent it from doing damage because they're able to think clearly about doing damage?
I want to be able to explain why, if the Ptur is a Da'uraisa, why that has to be a substantively different kind of action from the Torah's perspective than you're guarding a shore. Yes.
Is it not possible that the Svara, Shemini Akintenu, is a Da'uraisa Svara?
Again, but what does this Svara tell us?
The Svara tells us that the Torah didn't want to be mechayev you on the damages of the self-aware conscious beings that are able to apply Choshev Mishpat to their own advantage.
Yeah, I know, but you're already starting to bleed into a totally different approach.
Right, I'm fine with that. Is there a reason you're avoiding that on a Doraisa level? I'm not sure why.
Because that's not a kind of Doraisa type Svara. It's a Gzeira. It's a Takana.
There are Gzeira Doraisa, and I don't know. I mean, if Chosh Mishpat is about...
We have... I'll tell you.
...upon Din Torah,
Okay. Let's take a look at the Gemara Bava Kamma now. All right.
Can you just explain why, if we want to say the Batur is Deoraita, it has to be categorically different? In other words, what's the distinction between Deorabana and Deoraita?
I find it hard to say that it's a Gzera Takana Deoraisa. In other words, I think that if you say, like the Meiri does, that really Minator Yochayef the Niske Eved Va'ama, but... You know, we have a societal concern that, in other words, the Eved Va'ama have a perverse incentive.
So that would be Ptur D'Rabbanan.
That sounds like a Ptur D'Rabbanan. To say that the Torah patters you from the Nizakim of your Eved Va'ama, there's Exeris HaKasa somewhere, and the Svara is Shema Yachni Teno. So it's possible that it's a Takana D'Araisa, but I am more inclined to think that what the Torah is telling us is that there's a substantive difference between your shor doing damage and your Eved Va'ama doing damage, related to the fact that your shor is not capable of premeditated forethought then to do damage to cost somebody money. Whereas your Eved Va'ama are very much capable. They understand what they're doing when they do it, and they can even do it in such a manner that would make their owner's life miserable, to make the institution of the Eved Va'ama almost impossible to function.
And how would you learn from that that's Deoraita? Like, that reasoning is coming from Deoraita.
Well, you have to start out with the fact that if you assume that it's a Din Deoraisa, the Ptur, then, and the Mishnah's reason is really the reason, then you're going to have to explain, I think, something like that. It could be the Mishnah's reason is a smokescreen, right? The Prushim could just be throwing up dust in the eyes of the Tzedukim, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does in another case. And the Rishonim, by the way, talk about it. Some of the Rishonim mention that here. Like, maybe it's not the real Svara. But if it is the real Svara, then I think that Svara has to be understood in light of not just Stama, Takana, or Gzeira. Let's read the Gemara. Josh, can I ask you to... read the following. The Gemara wanted to say on the top of Dal and Amal, V'lav kavachomer, right? The last thing the Gemara had said, which is going to change, it's going to erase eventually, had said that if the Torah had only told us Shein, where it's Ein Kavanas Lahazik, we wouldn't have known that you're Chayav on Keren, which is Kavanas Lahazik. So the Gemara says, V'lav kavachomer, who?
V'lav kavachomer, who? Uma'a Shein, Shein Kavanas Lahazik Chayav, right? Just like by Shein, where there is no
Kavanah
Lahazik,
Kavanah Lahazik,
Karen
Shekavanah Lahazik, Lokol Shekain? Yeah. Kavanah is more reason why you should be Chayev. Right? The way we would say is that Kavanah Lahazik means you're more Chayev to watch your shore. Right? Because it's acting with some type of intent. Right? You see, you know the shore is going to have to do that. You better watch it. So the Gemara says, no.
So now, Istrich.
Okay, so they say that Eved Va'ama... Now, here's a very important question. What's the din of Eved Va'ama? If Ein Kavanasa Lahazik, I don't know what the din is. What does the Gemara here say the din is? Tirei. How do you see that in the Gemara? Afalgav. In other words, Eved Va'ama... Isn't it true that even if Kavanah Salahazik, they're potter? So you see that just because Kavanah Salahazik doesn't mean you're a chayef.
Now, this is an inherently, as Tosfos point out, a flawed proof. But we'll talk about that when we read Tosfos. In order, let me comment on it now. What is the Gemara trying to prove, should be trying to prove from Eved V'Amah? What should it be trying to prove?
Kaman al-Hazik either is or is not a Batur.
Well, I would say Kavanas al-Hazik they're trying to prove is a reason why you should be Potter. Now, in order to demonstrate that, what kind of a case would you have to bring? You have to bring a case of Nezek where what?
It was Kavanas al-Hazik.
Where when it's Kavanas al-Hazik.
You're Chayav.
You're Potter.
Oh, you're,
and when ain't Kavanas al-Hazik.
You're Chayav.
In which case, the Kavanas al-Hazik is the goreim for?
Patur.
Patur. The problem is, by the Eved V'Amah, both of them are Potter.
Yeah.
That's one of Tosfos' questions. If you want to demonstrate that Kavanas al-Hazik is a reason to be Potter, because you said that I couldn't learn from Shane to Karen, because Shane is in Kavanas al-Hazik and I'm Chayav, but Karen is Kavanas al-Hazik, so I might be Potter. The way Tosfos said, because if once it's out to do damage, it's going to go like a mad shore, no matter what, and I'm not going to be able to stop it. Right? That's that is so. The Gemara should have brought a raya from something where when it's ain kavanas al-hazik, you're chayiv, and when it's kavanas al-hazik, in the very same case, you're potter. And then you see that the gorei for the p'tur is kavanas al-hazik. That's going to be one of that's Tosfos's I think last second or third question.
Do you need both in order to just? In order to invalidate this, the question of the Kabbalah?
Yes, yes, I think you need to have both. Because if it's Chayiv all the time, you don't know that the Kavanah Lahazik.
It's just giving you, an example of saying where there's Kavanah and you're Putter. So therefore,
but you're not Putter because of the Kavanah.
But maybe we don't know why you're Putter.
Take Adam, for example. What's it did by Adam by Ein Kavanah Lahazik? What's it did? And what's it did by Kavanah Lahazik? What's the goreim? Is the kavanas al-hazik the goreim? The answer is no. We know it's not. We know that you're the adam or the olam. You're responsible, period. It's, I think the pashtus is in this Gemara, it has to be, you need something where the kavanas al-hazik is goreim the p'tur, that you could say that if I knew had Shane, which is ain't kavanas al-hazik, I wouldn't definitionally be able to learn Karen from a straight binyanah, because Karen is kavanas al-hazik. I think absolutely
so
clear.
You say here that even though when it's not kavanas al-hazik, it's still Potter. The reason in that case is
Potter. I'm not asking you to answer the question. I'm just pointing out when you read the Gemara, right now, so what the problem you're showing in front of us.
I'm not sure that's the case. I think that reading the Gemara, all the Gemara needs to prove now is that Kavanah al-Hazik doesn't generate a Chiyuv. It doesn't need to generate a Ptur, it only needs to not generate a Chiyuv. And this case proves sufficiently that Kavanah al-Hazik doesn't generate a Chiyuv.
I know you're wrong because I know another Rishonim read that way. I have to just think about why. Not because you can't argue in the Rishonim, just because likely they said is compelling. I have to think about that a little more. Fine. So now the Gemara responds saying the following. Amar Rav Ashi. Go ahead, Josh.
Amar Rav Ashi, Artu Eved Ama, Lav Tamar Rabba Yipu, Shema Yaknitenu Rabbo, V'yelech B'yad Gdisha Shel Chavero, V'imtza Zeh Mechayev Et Rabbo Me'amonu B'chol Yom.
Okay, so now the Gemara, because of this, it's going to go change completely direction and reverse everything, and Shalom Al Yisrael. Very nice. So what is Rav Ashi saying? How would you formulate in the abstract Rav Ashi's answer? In the meta language of the sugya, to explain what it's doing, what is its function in our dialogue? Josh, you get first.
I guess he's saying that Evan and Amma can't serve as a proof for the fundamental nature of the
Ptur. That Kavana Lahazik is a Ptur.
That Kavana Lahazik is a Ptur because there's a different, more superficial reason.
Right. There's a special reason there, and therefore the fact that you're potter by Kavanas al-Hazik is not proof that Kavanas al-Hazik is a reason for Ptur. That's an exceptional case, because there, the Kavanas al-Hazik, if you're Mechayiv, the person. So then the Eved and Amma have a way of and Eved and Amma have a way of making really a chaos. I'm going to stop Shir here with one simple question. And this you get to think about over the weekend, so don't answer it. Look very carefully at what Rav Ashi says. Is there something odd about Rav Ashi's statement? Or the way it's cited? Is there some... Don't answer the question. You get to think about it. Don't even tell me tonight because Hanukkah Sibah. Tonight, you tell me the only different Hanukkah. Okay? Something worth thinking about. Okay, I'm going to leave you. That's a really, really, really important question. And it's an important issue, and I think it provides a pshat solution to the issue, the issues that Tosis raises. It's totally different than what Tosis says. I also think it leads us to a much nicer conceptual place of explaining the whole parsha of Eved Vama. But it's very different. I do not believe, by the way, it's against the Gemara, what I'm suggesting, and it's not one of those pshatim where it's a different than the Stam. I think it's only different than what the Rishonim are assuming here, and that we will pick up with, God willing, on Sunday.